I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart. In my heart I have but one desire, and that one is you. No other will do.
Well, I gotta tell you something, Lisa.
What, Carl?
I am a believer. I am a believer in Vistro.
Oh, I've converted you.
Let me tell you.
It didn't take long.
I ordered my Vistro food.
Yep.
I got 20 meals.
Right.
And I have had three so far. But I just got it.
Right.
Okay. Came in a really nice box,
right.
All with the dry ice and everything.
Right. All frozen and fresh.
Put them right into my freezer.
Right.
And I started with, because I'm like, there's no way, I'm thinking to myself, there's no way the country fried chicken is going to be good.
And I have to say,
because
you have never, ever eaten plant-based food. So
never.
This is your first experience
right.
with this type of diet.
And I mean, I eat a lot of chicken.
I know you do.
And I'm thinking, okay, you're going to tell me that I'm going to eat plant-based chicken and it's going to be good.
And drum roll, please.
Lisa, I'm telling you.
I told you.
It tasted exactly like chicken.
Right.
And
but it's not.
Yeah, but it's not.
Okay.
And they had a gravy.
Yeah, the little gravy package.
You warm the gravy up.
Yep.
You put that on there. And then there were mixed vegetables.
Yep.
Like there was cauliflower and
carrots
and all kinds of good stuff. And I think potatoes. I'm trying to remember. I think there was potatoes with it. But it was good.
Because
it was so good.
You know
good.
What? They are the experts. Honestly, I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. They cook with fresh organic ingredients. They have chefs to prepare it, and they deliver it to you frozen. Mm. So it's always
and
fresh, and you take it out when you need it.
It was really good.
I'm so happy that you love
really
it.
I really liked it. And then the next day, I had the enchilada casserole.
One of my favorites.
Oh, my gosh. That was so
delicious.
I mean, this was...
Did you put it in the microwave?
I did. I haven't put anything... Some things you put in the oven, other things you do in the microwave. So far, I've only done the microwave.
Well, that's okay.
I'll figure out how to work the oven.
Right, you'll get there
eventually. I'm going to have to get the directions out of how to work the oven. But then, you know what I had yesterday as a snack? I didn't have it for breakfast.
Okay.
It's a breakfast thing, but I had it as a snack.
All right.
Because I was hungry later in the day. I had oatmeal breakfast pie. It was awesome.
I honestly, those are three
it
of my favorite
so
favorite dishes from Vistro. Vistro is my find.
How did you find Vistro?
I researched some meal delivery services that were healthy and fresh and well priced and just no commitment. And I wanted to customize my meals because I like to pick and choose what I want.
Yeah, it was amazing.
This is the best of the best.
Go to Vistro.com. It's V-E-E-S-T-R-O, right?
Vistro.com.
Yeah,
V-E-E-S-T-R-O.
Check it out, folks.
V-E-E-S-T-R-O.
I'm a meat eater. If I could, and it was delicious.
I can't wait
to eat the other things.
I'm so happy.
I have 17 more meals to eat.
You're joining me in the vegetarian bandwagon.
Let me tell you, and I know it's all organic. It's great for you.
Yes.
So I'm digging it. Vistro.com.
So
really like it.
I'm so glad.
In our next hour, we have a St. Patty's Day show on Favorite Story. So don't miss that. Ronald Coleman as host.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin the moment you come into view. Chances are you think that I'm in love with you. Just because my composure sort of slips.
Hour 4 of the WGN Radio Theater. You know, I don't think we talked about this. Five shows waiting for all of our listeners. There are five classic radio shows at our new website, 100radioshows.com. Just go to 100radioshows.com, put your email in, and you'll instantly receive an email from us with five classic radio shows via digital download. You can Bluetooth those shows right to your phone in your car or your home stereo, whatever you want to do, your computer. I'm able to do that, believe it or not. Someone who is really kind of not technical.
No, I know you're
not technical.
It's real easy. It connects automatically. So
I can actually do it. I listen to it. I have this like a Bose speaker thing at home, and I'm able to listen to anything I have on my email through, I don't know how, I just...
It just happens.
It just happens. But if you go to 100radioshows.com, at the very top of the site, you can put your email in and hit send, and then you will get Jack Benny, you will get Suspense, Richard Diamond, Private Detective, Fibber McGee and Molly, and
Gunsmoke.
Five classic radio shows. Full-length shows, all the original commercials. It's digitally remastered. They're great. It's a thank you for listening to the show. Then at that site, there are seven collections. Each of those have 100 radio shows via digital download. And if you use the promo code radio at checkout, you save 70%. Great way to build your library. You'll have, if you buy any one of those, you're going to have tons of shows to listen to whenever you want to. And each one of them is a different kind of genre. You can do all Westerns, 100 Western shows, 100 mystery shows, 100 comedy shows. There's 100 Christmas shows, you know, on and on and on. Seven different, you know, series. And don't forget, promo code radio at checkout, because you will save 70% on your order. Go to 100radioshows.com. So in this hour, Lisa, we have a favorite story. There are not a lot of favorite story episodes available, unfortunately, because it was on for 3 years. Ronald Coleman was the host. You can find them, but they're not in great quality. This one we're going to play is directly from a master transcription disc. So great quality coming your way in just a moment. And it is a St. Paddy's Day show. It's called Jamie Freel is the name of the story from 1947. Ronald Coleman is your host. That is coming your way along with Just the Facts after these words.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Just the Facts. This is 1947, going back to a year of favorite story, which is our hour four classic radio show. It's a lot of hours. It's October 13th of 1947, Junior Jamboree, later named...
American Bandstand?
Ooh, no. Later named Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, debuted on WBKB in Chicago.
Here we are. That's it. Here we are, back with you again.
Yes, by gum.
And yes, by golly.
I'm Kukla, Fran.
And dear old Ollie.
Do you remember that series?
Again. You know... I hated this show.
Did you
as a
hate
kid.
The show?
My mom would, you know, put it on for me to watch, and I'd be like, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah. Well, I felt that
it's
about
like
some
a bunch
shows.
Bunch of puppets.
You know. Yeah, it is. Well, it was created for children, but...
Well, I was never a child.
But
I was born an adult.
Well, it was watched by more adults than children. You're still a child, just so we're clear. It had no script. It was entirely ad-lib.
Really?
The whole thing. It was broadcast from 47 to 57. And Kukla, Fran, and Ollie was the first NBC show to be broadcast in color and one of the first to have a national syndication.
Mm,
all right,
never
there
liked
you go.
Kukla, Fran,
all right, well, you don't
Ollie.
Have to like it. Yeah. An important book in 1947 was Goodnight Moon by Margaret Wise Brown.
In the great green room, there was a telephone.
I never heard
and
of
a
this.
Red
what?
Balloon.
Never heard of
and
it.
A, and a picture of
a cow.
A cow.
Never heard of this.
Carl, I'm so sorry. I really...
Maybe that's what's wrong
I
with me.
I feel terrible for you.
Maybe that's what's wrong
I'm
with
gonna
me.
I'm going to bring it for you.
We might have just discovered what my problem is.
You never heard of Goodnight Moon. It's a very important book in 1947. It's a very highly acclaimed bedtime story. I'm so sorry you never read it to your children, but I will enlighten you.
I never heard of it.
Okay. We'll move on. 1947, Edward Lowe invented kitty litter. So before his invention, people kept their cats outside. So they had ashes or dirt or sand as cat litter. But, you know, when it would, they had to go inside, then what, right? So he decided to sell clay minerals, which is capable of absorption. He packaged it in 5-pound bags and called it kitty litter. He suggested pet stores sell it for 65 cents. They said, no way, it's never going to sell. It's too expensive. And it's much cheaper to, you know, send the cats outside. Well, Lowe told him to give it away free, give it away until people were willing to pay for it. Ultimately, he created Tidy Cat Box Filler in 1964. That's how it started.
You know, we can't say those that word on a show that's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Well, this is just how it's invented. It's clearly moved on in the years, and it's turned into something.
Cat's Pride is the greatest kitty litter in the world.
I didn't say that this was the best.
I know.
I said this is where it started, and look where Cat's Pride has taken it to.
Yeah, that's right.
A whole new level, for sure.
That's right. Please don't use any other kitty litter if you listen to the show. Be loyal to our sponsors,
Cat's
right?
Cat's Pride all the way.
All of our sponsors. We've got a lot of great sponsors here on the WGN Radio Theater. And you know what? We are loyal to our listeners. We are here every Saturday night. We love bringing you these shows. We absolutely want to bring you the best quality shows, information about them, so you can learn about the shows along with enjoying them. We have a blast coming here every Saturday and playing these shows for you. So thanks for being out there listening. We really appreciate you. In this hour, we're going to sort of celebrate St. Patty's Day.
In our coming classic up this, radio kind of way.
This week is St. Patty's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are they going to turn the river green?
I think they are going to turn the river green. I think that's the extent of the celebration, though, here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Well, Favorite Story was an anthology series, came to radio in 1946, and it was hosted by the great Ronald Coleman. It was produced and transcribed by the Frederick W. Ziv Company, and it features adaptations of classics of literature selected by a celebrity. So they would say, okay, Orson Welles, what was your favorite story? And he'd say, well, you know, Treasure Island. Okay, or whatever it was. They would go to these celebrities and find out what their favorite story is, and then they would dramatize it. Now, the person wouldn't be on the show. They would just say, this is so-and-so's favorite story.
Attribute it to them.
Yeah. Every week, Favorite Story did an incredible job of framing a classic novel into a 30-minute show. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
I mean, you take a whole novel, make it into 30 minutes. Now, because it was syndicated, it was very important to have a big-name host, and they did with Ronald Coleman. He helped them pick up radio affiliates. You know, when a show is syndicated, you have to kind of go and find your station in each market. Well, he actually went along for the ride on a lot of those and made, you know, personal appearances, and it was a big job, you know, to have the host do that, but he did, and you know what? He got paid a ton of money to do it. You ready for this? They paid him $150,000 a year for 3 years it was on the air. That was a huge amount of money.
That is
to
huge.
Pay back in 1946.
Sure. I wonder
and
what that
this was like a part time, you know,
right?
Probably 10 times.
Yeah,
and that was like a part time gig. I mean, this wasn't his full time gig. He was an actor, you know. But guess what? Big gamble paid off. This show was making $1 million in profit a year.
Wow.
It was a very successful show. And it had, like, you know, supporting characters, William Conrad, Jeanette Waldo, Howard Duff, Parley Bear. Great series. 118 episodes were produced. Not all of them survived. We have maybe a handful in great quality. You're going to like this one. It's called Jamie Freel. Ronald Coleman's the host. It's from April 15th, 1947, St. Patty's Day show. Here, uninterrupted now, is Favorite Story.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. We've been telling a variety of tales on this series, stories of love and mystery and imagination and a comedy or two. We thought it was high time we brought you an Irish tale, something from the great storehouse of Celtic legends, a yarn filled with leprechauns and love. So we asked an authority, Academy Award winner Barry Fitzgerald of the Irish Abbey Theatre. Mr. Fitzgerald chose as his favorite story an old folk tale which has been handed down through generations. The story of a lad and a colleen and the little people. We asked Mr. Fitzgerald exactly who the little people were. Fallen angels, he said, who were not good enough to be saved, nor bad enough to be lost, who took great pleasure in feasting and dancing, but above all, in the lilt of a Gaelic song. And all the old beautiful tunes of Ireland, it is said, are merely the music of the little people, caught up by those who have ears to hear. Barry Fitzgerald's favorite story is called Jamie Freel. And to play Jamie, we've recruited another veteran of Dublin's Abbey Theatre, the young RKO star, Sean McGlory. So sit back, close your eyes, we're off to a land of magic, as we bring you Jamie Freel.
Jamie?
It's meself, Mother. Now sit down there and make your apron big. It's Saturday night and I'm wanting to pour me week's wages into your lap.
Oh, the blessings of God and all the angels on you, Jamie. It's a sad widow woman I'd be if I didn't have you for the fine son you are.
No, no, I'll not be listening to compliments, Mother. There you are now.
Oh, and here's a halfpenny for you, lad, for tobacco.
I'm thanking you, Mother.
All the neighbors say me Jamie is the best son that was ever known or heard of.
Oh, do they now? But there are some of our neighbors whose opinion I never heard tell of at all.
What neighbors, lad?
Neighbors who live very close indeed, but whom I've never yet seen. Neighbors you can only see when the moon's bright as gold, like it is this night.
Jamie, boy, no. Put that look out of your two eyes and the thought of it out of your mind.
When I passed the old ruined castle this night, I thought I saw strange lights in the windows of it. And, Mother, Mother, did you hear that now?
Oh, here I am, happy as the good sunshine on St. Martin's Day, and me fine lad starts in hearing sounds in the night.
Mother, come to the door. You can't help but hear that, Mother. It's the music of the little people.
No, no, Jamie.
Oh, Mother, Mother, don't be putting your hands to your ears now. You hear them too, clear as a lark singing in the heavens.
It isn't wisdom, Jamie, for a hard-working lad as is the pride of the village to be thinking of such as them, or to be lending his 2 years to listen to the likes of them.
And yet, Mother, it's them that knows about all the good things of the world. The feasting and the fighting, the making of love and the playing of beautiful music. It's them, too, that knows the secret of the buried crocks of gold. Wealth and riches as'll make the few pence I pour into your lap look poor indeed. Mother, hand me cap. I'm away to the castle to seek me rightful fortune.
What? Would you venture there, lad? You that's this poor widow's one son. Don't be so venturesome and foolish, Jamie. They'll kill you. And then what'll come of me?
Oh, never fear, Mother, never fear. No harm'll happen me. But I must go now.
Oh, listen to your mother, me darling, darling boy.
I am, I do, Mother. But it's the music of them that's calling me. Jamie, Jamie Freel, the greatest treasure of all your born days is waiting for you. Listen. Jamie, Jamie Freel. That's what they're saying. Can't you hear it, Mother? It's in the air as sure as the stars are in the sky.
Jamie, boy, don't.
Oh, Jamie!
Ah, welcome, welcome, Jamie Freel. It's the music of you I've been hearing. Floating through the air like the green moonlight of a May night.
Like as not it was.
Tell me quick now, what do they call the likes of you? An elf?
Well,
or a leprechaun, maybe?
Mm.
A will-o'-the-wisp, perhaps? A pixie? Pan, are you, perhaps? You play the pipe.
Lad, we're of a generous and given nature. Call us what you like. It's your belief in us which is important, and never the name you call us.
How many of you little people are there now?
One, two...
No, lad, don't count us now. If you go about one, two, three in us like so, you're likely to bewitch us. Tot us up like so many figures, and we'd be changed into mortals. That'd be a sad, sad day indeed.
Well, I bid the top of the evening to all you little people, and it's happy I am to be laying eyes on you too. Well, are you not going to answer me?
Sure, it's common knowledge, lad, that the little people have not power of speech.
Oh.
Back in the days when gifts were being handed out, so much speech was given to mortal women that when it came to the little people, there was not enough left to go round. Ah, but they'd smile on you and cry tears for you and dance for you. I dance for you. But when there's speaking to be done, there's the likes of me who's a talking one.
Well, you called me this night. What is it you wish now?
Oh, we called you, did we? Did we now?
As sure as if you shouted me name from the crest of Bottle Hill.
Well, 'tis said that what a mortal hears depends a great deal on what he listens for. Ah, but here you be, Jamie Freel, and you may as well spend the moonlit evening lending us your strong right arm for our revels.
I'm with you, I'm with you. Jamie Freel's got a soul filled with adventure this night.
Ah, good, Jamie, good. Listen now. We're going to ride to a distant spot to steal a young lady.
Oh.
A maiden with the burning beauty of a Grecian goddess in her, and whose two eyes are like starlight shining through raindrops.
Ah.
Will you ride with us, Jimmy Freel?
Aye, that I will, that I will.
We'll ride in a troop of horses as is the sons and daughters of the winged white horse of Kilkenny. Strap yourself well in the stirrups, boy, for this night we ride fast and far.
What place is this we're stopping at, little man?
Oh, questions, questions, questions. Jamie Freel, can you not speak in a simple declarative sentence now?
Well, it's so dark. Black and dour as the bottom of a bog hole.
Ah, there'll be some shy accommodating moonbeams to shine on what we're waiting to see. Touch your hand to the door now, and tread softly, lad. Before you can say Bridget O'Halloran, you'll be seeing the face of the prize of this night.
Door? Oh, here it is. Oh. Such a face as a man dreams of belongs to the angels of heaven. As white as the snow that touches the top of the mountains. Her dewy lips puckered into a sad, dreamy smile. Oh, she's too beautiful to be real. Oh, to kiss the round red mouth of her and to find out.
Hold on now, Jamie Freel. We didn't bring you along to fall in love with Miss Sleeping Beauty. It's our prize, she is.
Oh, for the love of all the saints, tell me, is she mortal? Does she exist? Or is she some tormenting dream in the moonbeams?
Ah, she's mortal right enough. And as beautiful a mortal as we could find.
What place is this, then? Oh, if you take me away from here itself, I'll come back to find her, though she's across every sea of the seven of them. Well, don't stand there, little man, giving me no heed. Is she an Indian maiden? Is this the North Pole or south of the China Seas? Is this an island we're on, or the great continent of New York? How far did we travel this night?
Ah, if you knew all the answer to those questions, lad, you'd no longer have an inquiring soul. And a man without an inquiring soul might as well be dead in 6 feet under.
Oh, come on, man, come on, tell me. How far did we travel this night? 100 miles, 1,000, 1,000,000?
Well, once, when I was souring up a pail of milk, as was one of me duties in me younger days, I heard an old wife say that the little people could girdle the globe in a wink of an eye. Well, wink your eye, Jamie Freel, and let's try it, huh?
And leave this maid with the glory of every morning sunrise on the face of her?
Leave her? Certainly not. She's the prize of the evening, and we're taking her with us.
Are we near home, little man?
Near enough, lad. Whoosh! There goes Dublin. And whoosh! There's the Boyne River in the valley below. Strathmullen it is now. And Killybegs. And Tanny.
It's close to home we are right enough. Little man?
Yes, Jamie, lad?
You've all had your turn at carrying the young lady. Would you do me the favor of letting me hold her for a bitty?
Aye, Jamie, you may take your turn at carrying her, to be sure. Here, hold tightly, lad.
Oh, girling, when you open your eyes, as the face of Jamie Free you'll be seeing. There's me mother's house below now. Goodbye to you now, little people. Goodbye.
Come back, Jamie Freel. Is that the way it reaches? Come back.
Mother, quick, wake up now.
Jamie, where have you been all this night? It's worried to death I've been about you. Oh, what's that you're carrying in your two arms?
Oh, mother, there's no time for questions or answers now. Hurry up and get me a handful of rice and barley to throw to the night wind.
The little people are after chasing you.
Right on me heels there.
I'll throw the rice and barley. Quick now, lad. You sprinkle sand on the doorstep. That'll make them keep their respectful distance.
The rice, mother, the rice. And the barley, too.
There now. There.
Jamie Freel, you have our lovely prize away from us. But you'll have no good of her. For we'll strike her deaf and dumb.
What?
What's that he's saying?
Deaf and dumb!
Deaf and dumb.
Ready for Act Two of Barry Fitzgerald's favorite story, an old Irish folktale called Jamie Freel. Sean McLaury stars as Jamie, with Arthur Q. Bryan as the chieftain of the little people. The colleen with the glory of every morning sunrise on the face of her has been struck deaf and dumb by the little people. In Jamie's cottage, she sits in a chair by the fireplace, her eyes still closed. Jamie, with a heart full of love, looks at her and waits for her eyes to open.
Poor creature. She is a handsome one. No wonder they set their hearts on the little ones.
I had to bring her here, Mother. I had to. Surely you wouldn't have allowed me to let her go with them to be lost forever.
But she appears to be a fine lady, Jamie. How can a lady eat our poor diet and live in our poor way?
I'll work for her, Mother. I'll work for you both. Mother, her eyes, the young lady's eyes, they're opening.
Oh.
Hello, girling. Tis me, Jamie Freel. And this here is me mother, Maura Freel.
Oh, don't be trembling now.
Mother, she's trying to speak and cannot. Oh, girling, listen to me. The little people try to steal you, seeing as you're the most beautiful creature that ever is or was. Mother, she can't speak or listen like the little people said.
Oh, wish you, poor sweet child. I'll get you me wool shawl. Do not be frightened now.
Oh, girling, I know not what corner of this wide world you're from, but I do know this. Each of your two eyes is like the whole blue vault of heaven. Ah, no, don't cloud them with tears now. Jamie Freel's here, and his right arm and his loving heart will do their best to protect you. Yes, don't tear the door down, I'm coming.
There he is. Jamie Freel, this delegation from the village is here to see you and have words with you.
Well, here I am then to be seen. But that's no call to be pounding on me door so hard that the divil himself would rise up to be counted.
Where is she?
Where's who?
The foreign girl that's bewitching the whole countryside.
Take a bit to your tongue now, Barry O'Rourke. I'll not have you saying an evil word against a sweet young thing who can't even speak to defend herself.
The crops are failing.
Yeah.
Every farming man for 20 miles around will tell you so. The fishermen come back with empty nets. There's a fine fat curse in this village. And the alien girl you've got at your chimney corner, is it?
Crops have failed before, and it's many a time and it comes up empty without blaming a poor girl for it.
Poor girl, is she? She's a witch. We wouldn't mind so much if she was an Irish witch. But we'll have no heathen foreign witches in this village. Believe me, we won't, Jerry Fraser.
Get out of me house, all of you. Get out before I take an iron poker and smash in all your narrow little heads. Go on.
Listen to us, Jerry Fraser. Listen now. Send this girl away from our village, or we'll burn your house down around you.
Mother, Mother, I'll be bidding you goodbye now.
Jamie, boy, don't you go.
Sure, I must, Mother, I must. I'll not have your own house burned down around you.
Where will you be traveling? When will you be coming home?
The girl and I, we're going to travel over the whole of this island of ours. She can't hear me or speak to me, and if she could itself, it's not our tongue she'd be speaking or understanding. But I'm going to show her Ireland, Mother. I'm going to show her the rich golden valleys and the bright waters so that she too can become one of us. And then when we come back, maybe our neighbors will treat her more kindly.
Oh, let me kiss you, Jamie boy. Godspeed. The saints watch over you and send you back to me soon, Alana.
The hill with you, Colleen. Up, run, and let the lovely raven hair of your head stream behind you in the fingers of the wind. You're laughing, girlie. Oh, they can keep you from talking, yes, but they've found no way to keep happiness from you. You're laughing, and I have a happy and a warm feeling in my heart, too, like the sunshine on a spring morning. There now, there, the top of the hill. Look, girlie, look. Oh, but there. There, sure you must be thirsty in the sun high in the noonday heavens. Here you are, Colleen. A drink of water from the wishing well of Glengorham. Sip it easy now, and the wishes that are hidden in your heart will come true. I'll hold your hand, girling, so you don't drink too rapid-like. For the water of this well, even when the sun shines on its stones, is so clear and cold, it'll shake the very teeth in your head. Listen how deep it is. Oh, wishing well, wishing well. I want one thing only, this girl here, and the everlasting laughter and the love of her. Girling, there's so much I want to show you. The places Finn McCool, the great giant, walked in the days when there were giants in this land. The places the two great lovers of old, Diarmid and Gráinne, went, and where they slept one night in a bed of heather on the slope of a hill in Connacht. I want to show you Connemara and the castle of the Pirate Queen. Oh, Chailina, Chailin, have you seen enough of this land to know that you can never be a foreigner here so long as your own true love is with you? Oh, when you smile up at me that way, I know there's a greater bridge than ever was made with words and hearing. Come, girlie, I'm going back to the little people and ask them in the name of this love I have for you to take the enchantment off you. Stop your melody, little man. I've come to have a reckoning with you.
Oh, so it's you, Jamie Freel. Little people all, come have a look who's come a-visiting us.
I'll have none of your looking now or tricking.
Oh, he's getting real uppity like this, Jamie Freel. And him has played such a poor trick and stole the nice young lady from us. Where is she now, Jamie?
I left her at me mother's house. Why did you have to strike her deaf and dumb? And I haven't so many loving things to say to her. And all of them passing by her ears like the silent breezes of the nights.
Let's say perhaps there was a plan in it now.
A plan? Ah, speak plain now, little man. I've lost me patience with you long ago.
Oh, you mustn't do that. Once you lose a patience, it's very hard indeed to purchase another. Patience comes high these days, and very few village shops there are that keep a supply on their shelves.
But why did you do it now? This lovely child and her not able to say even what distant land she comes from.
Jamie, lad, say as how a crock of gold was lying around for anyone to pick up walking down a street, instead of being way at the end of the rainbow. A difficult place indeed to find, let me tell you now. What would be the value then of a crock of gold? A body'd prize it as much as sneezing into the wind.
What's all this talk to do with me and the girl?
Love's like a crock of gold, lad. Only worth considerable more.
Don't you think now I'm after knowing that for many a long, long day, little man?
Little people all, I'm thinking our lad here has reached the end of his rainbow. Perhaps we should tell him where to be digging.
Don't be speaking to me in riddles now, thwarting and tormenting me.
I'll speak right out, Jamie Freel. Go you now to the sacred river Boyne, and take you by the light of the full moon 3 drops of water. Place 1 drop on each ear, and 1 drop on the red, red lips of your own true love, and the spell will be broken.
1 drop on each ear, and 1 drop on the red, red lips of her. Oh, little man, I'm thanking you from the bottom of me joyful heart. And I'm thinking that you planned it this way all along.
That we did, Jamie Freel, that we did. Ever since you were a wee lad. But we're after appreciating your complete belief in the likes of us. Where would we be now without it?
Mother, quick now, where's the maid?
Jamie, you're killed surely this time, me poor boy.
No, indeed, better luck than ever this time.
What's that you're carrying in the glass, lad?
3 drops of moonlit water, mother. Enchantment-breaking water from the Boyne River.
Here's your colleen, Jamie. The face of her buried in her arms, crying her poor heart out.
Girling, let me look into your face. Oh, dry those tears from your blue eyes. For I've the magic liquid that'll make you speak and make you be able to be hearing all the grand words I have trembling on me lips for you. God and all the saints willing, someday you'll learn to understand the tongue we speak. Hold the glass, mother. Hold it close here by the lovely face of her.
Jamie, lad.
1 drop on your right ear. 1 drop on your left ear. And 1 drop on the red, red lips of me own true love. Can you talk now, girling? Can you? What are the words you're going to speak to your Jamie? What are the first words that are going to fall from your lips? Oh, whatever language you speak, girling, speak it from your heart. Then I'll go to all the scholars of the land to get the translation of it.
Her lips are opening, Jamie.
Say it, girling. Say it.
Sure, and I love you, Jamie Freel.
Saints preserve.
Where did you get a brogue like that, girlie? Oh, you've been watching the movement of me lips all these months now, and you mastered the way to speak it.
Oh, no, Jamie Freel. The distant land I'm from is Donegal, right here in the green hills of Ireland.
Been listening to Jamie Freel, the favorite story of the world-famous actor Mr. Barry Fitzgerald. Do you doubt the existence of the little people? Well, after this program is over, go outside and listen. Do you think that's the wind whistling? Well, it may be, but if you listen hard enough, sure you may hear the music of the little people. At any rate, it's been a pleasure to bring you this Irish tale on our radio half hour. Our congratulations to the Abbey Theatre's Sean McGlory for his portrayal of Jamie, to all the members of our cast and orchestra, and to Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee, who dramatized this delightful legend. Next week, we have something which is quite off the beaten track, an adventure by Herman Melville, the author of the great American novel Moby Dick. It's called The Strange Mr. Bartleby, and it promises to mystify, intrigue, and startle you. It was selected as the favorite story of the Universal International star and director, Robert Montgomery. When we bring you Bob Montgomery's favorite story, The Strange Mr. Bartleby, we hope you'll be listening.
Really good show, right?
Right.
Favorite story from April 15th, 1947, show called Jamie Freel. And it was an Irish folktale, leprechauns and enchantment. Favorite story of Barry Fitzgerald. Also in that cast, we had Sean McClory, Arthur Q. Bryan, Gloria Gordon, Dorothy Scott, and, of course, the great Ronald Colman as host. And Ronald Colman did a lot of radio. He was, of course, a movie star, but he had his own radio show, The Halls of Ivy, with his wife, Benita Hume. And then he was always, I shouldn't say always, but quite often guest starring on the Jack Benny program, because Jack pretended like, or at least on the show, that his next door neighbor was Ronald and Benita Coleman. He was always going over there and borrowing things from him and never returning them.
See, and this is why I don't want to be neighbors with you.
You would not want to be. I'd be like, hey, do you have any butter? Or do you have any amount of milk?
Feeling a little off to me.
Do you have some Vistro?
Vistro, I
you know,
have.
You have some. All right, hope you enjoyed Favorite Story. You know, St. Paddy's Day is this week, so we thought we'd play that. And in our next hour, we have a Michael Shane. He was a reckless, redheaded Irish detective, Michael Shane. So that's why we're going to do that, too.
Makes sense.
You know, St. Paddy's Day only comes once a year,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, we like to be
always
seasonal here.
After me, Lucky Charms, Lisa.
Do you like Lucky Charms, Carl?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I like Lucky Charms.
You're a fan.
Yeah, we also have an episode of The Unexpected in our next hour. But first, we have to pay some bills, and we'll be right back.
Magic moments when two hearts are kept. Magic moments, memories we've been sharing.
I'll never forget the moment we kissed the night of the hayride. The way that we hugged to try to keep warm while taking a sleigh ride.
Magic moments, memories we've been sharing. Magic.
Did you ever take a hayride?
Of course.
I think I did once, too.
You know,
time ago.
We go apple picking every season. We always take a hayride.
Who's
ride.
We? You
My
and your
family.
You and your hubby?
Well, the kids. We
you
all
and Dan?
Go. Well, I have
Wolf,
kids.
No E?
The kids. We take the kids apple picking.
You got a lot
picking.
Of kids. We got like 12, 14 kids?
Yeah, like 12 or 14. I can't even
How
keep
many
track.
Do you
I have four kids.
That's
and
a
we
lot
go apple
of
picking
kids.
Every year. We take a hayride.
I have three.
Yeah, well, I got one more.
I know.
And each one is a lot.
Kids are a lot of work, huh?
They're a lot, yeah.
Man, oh, man.
Yeah.
So you go apple picking every year, do
yeah,
you?
Yeah, in
really?
The fall.
Where?
Sometimes we go to Apple Holler,
uh-huh.
which is in Apple Holler, Wisconsin, a little
oh.
bit north.
Wow.
But I don't think, I think there's one other place we've been to, but that's our staple. That's the closest one.
Remember when we went to, Where was it? The place with the horses and everything.
Mm-hmm.
What was that called? And there was hayride there, wasn't
we,
there?
We went on a horse. We went on the boats and we.
Yeah.
What
was it? I forgot the name of that place.
I did too.
I'm sorry, I forgot the name of it. I'm getting old.
I can't remember either.
You know, unfortunately, because of this darn coronavirus, we had to cancel our cruise. I'm really bummed about it because we had a lot of people going, man.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we had a lot of people. It was almost sold out.
Yeah, it really was the smartest decision we could do was to cancel the cruise.
Kinda
there's too much. Obviously, a cruise isn't the right place to be right now. And hopefully, eventually, at the right time, we'll plan another trip.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be a cruise or what.
No, we'll do a classic radio cruise again.
Well, we can go to a resort. Too. It doesn't have to
for
be
for all the
cruise.
People listening that were booked on there, thank you for booking. Sorry that didn't work out, but we made sure everybody got their money back.
Yeah.
Don't forget, folks, we have a classic radio club. I'm telling you, this club is fantastic. If you want to collect 10 classic radio shows each month, I think that's the right number. It's not a lot of shows. You can listen to 10 shows each month. They're amazing quality. Like, they're brilliant sound quality. Plus, I send you copious liner notes about the shows. You can get the 10 classic radio shows on 5 CDs in a collector case with nice pictures of the stars on it and everything. Or you can get them via digital download sent to your email. But all of the information is at classicradioclub.com. And I'm always kind of combing the library of over 100,000 radio shows and picking very unique shows for the club. And there's always great shows. There's always like Suspense and Gunsmoke and Jack Benny. You know, we rotate them, of course. And then I write about them. And I think the club is really, it's a really fun thing to put together, and I know the people that are part of the club really enjoy it. In fact, many people have posted testimonials at our website, which is classicradioclub.com. We'd love you to join. In fact, if you do join, it's only $1 the first month. We just do that as an introductory offer. There's no like long-term contract to sign or anything like that. You can cancel at any time. Join the club. Join Classic Radio Club. Get your first 10 shows. In fact, when you join, you get Abbott and Costello, full-length 30-minute show, and they do the Who's On First routine in there. So you'll have that in your very first collection. There's Jack Benny, Gunsmoke, Inner Sanctum. I'm trying to think. Suspense is in that first batch. So do go to classicradioclub.com. We'd love you to be a member. In our next hour, we have two radio shows. We have The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis from 1945. And then we will have time to play The Unexpected with Barry Fitzgerald. Barry Sullivan is star from 1948. That's in our next hour. Sound good, Lisa?
Yeah, I'm excited.
You know, because Lisa didn't do just the facts for next hour, so we have to fill that with unexpected.
Well, there's a reason for that. We chose to fill it with unexpected. But, you know, it's a little variety, a little here, a little there. Makes everybody happy.
All right, stick around. We'll be back after the news. Hour 5 of the WGN Radio Theater. We're here every Saturday night from 10 p.m. till 3 o'clock in the morning, playing all your favorite classic radio shows. And Lisa, you know what?
What, Carl?
In this hour, a good detective adventure of Michael Shane from 1945. We'll also play a quarter hour episode of The Unexpected with Barry Sullivan. So you're going to get two classic radio shows in this hour, like Double Mint Twins.
Two
radio shows in one.
Well, we just want everybody to get their money's worth out of this last hour.
Exactly. And don't forget, folks, join the Classic Radio Club. This is a club we've had for about 2 years now, right, Lisa?
Two years. Like two for one.
Again, another two. The Classic Radio Club, when you join, you get 10 classic radio shows sent to you via digital download or on 5 CDs. And the collector case with these CDs, pretty spectacular.
Yeah, well, we know how to do it right. We just want everybody to be happy and really have the opportunity to collect classic radio. If you're a big fan of radio or you know someone who is, this is a great opportunity for you to have these shows in pristine quality.
Right, and it's not overwhelming. It's 10 shows a month. There's liner notes that I write. It's really a fun club to be part of, the Classic Radio Club. To learn all about it, just go to classicradioclub.com. And the first month, it's only $1 to join.
You know, this might be
$1.
And you know, what I was thinking is, what? I don't want to talk about it, but this might be a really good month to hang out and listen to some classic radio instead of doing some other things.
I guess so. And you know what? Even I can afford a dollar.
Oh, you'd probably complain about it, but I think you can.
Yeah, $1 to join the Classic Radio Club. Check it out. You can cancel at any time. It's not one of those things where you're roped into it. It's really a lot of fun. We have hundreds and hundreds of members. Go to classicradioclub.com. Read all about it there. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, it's Michael Shane Detective. Stick around.
If I rule the world, every day would be the first day of spring. Every heart would have a new song to sing, and we'd sing of the joy every morning would bring. If I rule the world, every man would be as free as a bird. Every voice would be a voice to be heard. Take my word, we would treasure.
All right, Lisa, are you ready for Michael Shane Detective?
Yeah, I actually love playing detectives in the last hour. It just gives a little, you know, climax, I guess, to the hour.
Guess who did it, right?
Who done it?
Guess who done it. Don't forget our text in line, 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. All right, Michael Shane, good detective. It was created by Davis Dresser under the pen name Brett Halliday. And the Michael Shane series came to radio in the late 1930s. He was a reckless, redheaded Irishman. He was a hard-boiled private eye. And at first, he worked out of Miami. And he was a vigilante detective similar to Mike Hammer. Now, Hugh Beaumont starred in a popular movie series which paved the way for a Michael Shane radio series in 1944 with Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis as his gal Friday, Phyllis Knight. By 1948, Jeff Chandler, who was playing Philip Boynton, the bashful biologist on Our Miss Brooks, starred in a revival series directed by Bill Russell. Now, that lasted 26 episodes in syndication, and one final run ran over ABC starring Donald Curtis and later Robert Sterling and Vinton Hayworth. And in the TV version, you had Richard Denning. Now, you know that name, Richard Denning. He was Lucille Ball's husband on My Favorite Husband, and he played Michael Shane in a TV series that only lasted 32 episodes. You know why it only lasted 32 episodes?
No.
It was up against The Twilight Zone on another network, and
rough.
Nobody watched it because they were all watching
that's some
the
tough
Twilight
competition.
Zone. Yeah, we have a very good episode now of Michael Shane Detective. This is called The Mary Noble Case. It stars Wally Mayer from June 11th, 1945. Uninterrupted, here is Michael Shane Detective.
The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. The people who make 76 gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company, present The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. As San Francisco's busiest private detective, Mike Shane can be found at almost any hour at almost any spot in the city, except one, perhaps, his apartment. Yet right now, that is just where we find him. Of course, he's there only long enough to pick up his overcoat and two theater tickets. Waiting impatiently in the hall doorway is his attractive assistant, Phyllis Knight.
Mike, what's keeping you?
I can't find the tickets.
Oh, fine. Fine. The master detective.
Oh, I know. I know. I left them in my other suit.
Say, Mike.
Hmm?
Somebody's coming up your stairs. A strange woman.
Yeah? I don't know any strange women.
You better not. Your date's with me tonight.
Good evening. Is this the apartment of Michael Shane?
Yes, it is.
And you're Mrs. Shane?
Well, no, no. I'm his assistant, Phyllis Knight.
Oh, I'd like to see Mr. Shane. It's very, very important.
Well, we were just going
out. I'm sorry to impose, but I'm afraid it's a matter of life and death. Would you tell him that, please?
That's all right. I heard it.
Oh, Mr. Shane, you are Mr. Shane?
Yes, yes. Come in, come in.
My name is Mary Noble. I arranged to be in your neighborhood tonight, Mr. Shane. I had to talk to you.
Yes? Oh, won't you sit down?
Oh, thank you. I brought my friends to visit some people across the street at the El Tovar Apartments. Then I slipped away so I could see you without them suspecting.
I don't understand. Without who suspecting?
Mr. and Mrs. Pringle and Chico.
Chico?
That's Mr. Sabadell.
Oh.
I told them that I'd stay in the car, that I needed fresh air. You see, Uncle Briggs lets me go out only with his friends.
Hmm?
People who will spy on me and tell him what I do. Chico says he loves me, but I know that I'm not pretty. He wants my money.
Now, just a second. You said Uncle Briggs. Would that be Briggs Noble?
Yes, the rich, the upright Mr. Briggs Noble. I'm his niece, and he's trying to poison me.
Oh, now, really?
You don't mean that, I'm sure.
Oh, but I do. For the past 2 weeks, I've had strange sick spells. I'm sure it's the poison.
What does your doctor say?
I haven't had a doctor.
Hmm?
I've never told anyone, but I can't stand it any longer. Uncle Briggs wants me out of the way. I'm a burden.
I can't imagine you being a burden to a millionaire.
That's what's so strange. He's rich, yet he wants more and more money. Next month I'll be 21, and then I inherit my father's money. It's in trust for me. Uncle Briggs wants my money. That's the only way I can explain it.
And just what do you want me to do?
Talk to my uncle. Warn him that you know everything. You'll protect me. Be my bodyguard.
Oh, now, Miss Noble, I'm not that kind of a detective.
You don't believe me, do you?
Well, I can't say. I'm not sure. I might talk to your uncle, but I'm certain you've imagined things.
I see. I thought you really help people.
Hmm?
But I was wrong. No one will help me. No one, no.
Miss Noble, now, if you'll tell me... Wait a minute. Miss Noble!
Well, that gal certainly got off the merry-go-round backwards.
Mm-hmm. She seemed perfectly reasonable when she first walked in.
But that talk of being a burden on a rich uncle, spied on by his friends, and poison.
I don't know. She walked the fence between sanity and, well, the opposite.
She was scared, Blue, anyway. She almost got me going.
People do talk strangely when they're in terror. She said those friends were across the street.
Mm-hmm. The El Tovar.
Yeah, that's right. I'll tell you what. Let's go after her.
There. There she is, Mike, crossing the street.
Yeah. Miss Noble. Mary Noble. Mary. Mary, stop!
Mike, that taxi! Mike!
Honest, mister. She fell right in front of my cab. I didn't run over her.
Listen, she's dead, isn't she?
I'm telling you, I saw her fall.
You mean she tripped?
No, no. She slumped in a heap right in front of me. I didn't hit her.
Maybe he's right, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Look at her dress here. There's no dirt from the wheels. She wasn't dragged.
Sure, I stopped in time. My bumper hardly touched her.
Yes. Huh? Yes, it's Mary.
Hurry, hurry.
Oh, heavens. Oh.
Yes.
What happened? Yes.
She's dead.
She's dead. Oh, William, I told you we shouldn't have left in the car.
Well, she said she wanted some fresh air. How
no.
could we know this would happen?
I take it you are Mr. and Mrs. Pringle?
Why, yes. Do we know you, sir?
No, I'm Mike Shane, a private detective.
Oh.
This girl just left my apartment.
Oh, so that's where she went.
Huh?
She got out of the car and said she wanted to take a walk.
You her chauffeur?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't understand, sir. Why did Mary go to you?
She thought somebody was trying to kill her, that her life was in danger.
Ah, rubbish. Tommy rot. The girl imagined things.
Maybe not, Mr. Pringle. You're a good friend of my boss, but I don't mind saying...
Oh, shut up, Dan, for heaven's sake.
Please, gentlemen, gentlemen. Poor Mary. She lies dead. What must we do?
We must go call an ambulance.
We'll call more than an ambulance, honey. We'll call the inspector.
Don't misunderstand me, Mike. It's a sad case, but you admit yourself she was neurotic. Poison business was all in her mind.
Possibly, Inspector. Possibly, but the only way you can be sure of it is to investigate.
And you asked for an autopsy, Mike. All right, I've ordered it against my own judgment. That's as far as I can go.
You know, we really don't have any proof, Mike. Maybe she just had a heart spell and fell in front of the taxi.
Police certainly can't investigate Briggs Noble on such weak evidence. He comes from one of the oldest families in San Francisco. He's rich, society. Murder isn't his line, Mike.
All right, Inspector, all right. But will you do one thing more for me?
What is it?
Go out with us to see Briggs Noble.
No, Mike, you're the most stubborn. We gotta know what we're talking about first.
I'll do the talking if you want. I'll take the blame. But I want you there in case.
Wait a second. Yes?
Autopsy report, sir. Mary Noble. Examination of stomach shows heavy dose of poison.
Mike, you were right.
Sergeant, what was the poison? Arsenic?
Well, I can't tell, sir. Autopsy surgeon says the victim's hands are clenched tight and toes turned under. He says that the same symptoms of a rare native poison from South America.
I see. Mike, is there anything you want to ask him?
No. No, just tell him if they find anything else to call you at the home of Briggs Noble.
In just a moment, we'll return to the adventures of Michael Shane. Ladies and gentlemen, sludge in an engine is terrible stuff. It sticks to the pistons, valves, and other working parts, and it slows down and interferes with smooth engine performance. The sludge formed by some oils is so sticky that it doesn't ordinarily drain out when the oil is changed, but continues to accumulate. The only way to get rid of it is to have your engine flushed out occasionally. Your Union Oil Minuteman can perform this service for you quickly and cheaply. He has a special solvent-action flushing oil known as Cleanse Oil. Now, Cleanse Oil is harmless to your engine, but it cuts the sludge in a hurry. So when the Cleanse Oil is drained out, the sludge flushes right out with it, leaving the engine nice and clean. Then, with a fresh supply of pure paraffin-based Triton motor oil, you're all set for hundreds of miles of clean, safe engine operation. Just drive in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and ask for Union Oil Engine Flushing Service. Thank you. Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector have just entered the ornate library of Briggs Noble. Noble stands in front of the fireplace.
This is the first time I've had the pleasure of meeting you, Mr. Shane. I'm told you already know my friends here?
Yes, yes, but the inspector doesn't.
Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Pringle, Mr. Sabadell, and of course my chauffeur, Dan Casey.
How do you do?
I didn't know you.
I imagine, Mr. Shane, that you've come here to tell me my niece appealed to you for protection.
Yes, she did, Mr. Noble. I told your friends that.
Yes. Oh, poor girl. I never understood her. She was so moody.
Hmm?
I tried to make her happy. Gave her everything she asked for, except the one thing she really wanted. A pretty face. So she chose the final remedy.
You mean she committed suicide?
What else? She threw herself under a taxi cab?
It's not that simple, Mr. Noble. The autopsy shows she was not killed by the taxi.
Really?
No, she was poisoned.
What? Poisoned? Oh. Why?
Quite bent on death, wasn't she?
Perhaps not, sir. You see, we think she was murdered.
Oh, no. No.
Did she have any enemies, Mr. Noble?
None. Nor many friends. I suppose that was the trouble.
Do any of you know if she was sick during the past couple of weeks?
Why, yes, I remember one day. I was driving her and Mr. Savadell. She almost fainted. You remember it, sir?
I remember.
Did she tell you, Mr. Savadell, that she planned to see a detective tonight?
No, I come in, Mr. and Mrs. Pringle are with her. I give Maria a box of candy. We make small talk.
Mm-hmm.
She keeps saying we must all go visit some friend. But that is all. It's difficult to remember.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Noble. Your niece said she was to come into an inheritance on her 21st birthday. Where will that money go now?
Well, I'm the last member of the family. It'll come to me.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Our family has had a tragic history. All violent deaths. Mm. My brother Edward died in a shipwreck off China. My nephew, Grant Noble, disappeared in his plane over Brazil. Dodd Noble, Mary's father, was crushed in a train wreck.
Aren't the women alive?
No. Edward and Dodd married, but their wives are gone, too. It's been very, very depressing.
Mr. Noble, it's time to be frank with you. Your niece came to me for protection from you. She said you were trying to poison her.
Why, that's fantastic, Miss...
She thought that about me. Poor girl. I told you she had strange moods.
It's a very weak explanation, sir. You admit she had no enemies and that you would inherit her estate.
Why should I want her money? I have more now than I want. You gentlemen don't realize the penalties of wealth.
That's neither here nor there, sir. Mary Noble was poisoned. She named you. It's my duty to determine the facts.
I see, Inspector, that you're determined to make me out a murderer. All I can say is this. I'm not guilty.
But, Mr. Noble...
Furthermore, if you insist upon bringing charges against me, I'm a man of wealth and power. I can employ the best legal counsel. I think you'd look very embarrassing in court. It would not benefit your reputation.
I see. Thank you for the warning, sir. Good night.
Well, I don't mean to tell you boys your own business, but why didn't you search the house for poison?
Well, for one thing, the killer would be smart enough to remove it. Second, I don't think Noble is our man. He has no motive.
Don't tell me the brave inspector is scared out.
No. Look at it this way, Mike. Poison is one of the subtlest types of murder.
Mm-hmm.
The killer figures that because nobody sees him actually give the victim poison, no jury will convict him on circumstantial evidence. Noble has a perfect alibi. She committed suicide. He ought to know. He's our uncle.
If it were suicide, the girl would hardly run to Mike to protect her life and then take poison.
Unless she hated her uncle enough to try to frame him with her murder.
Well, let's get rid of this suicide alibi right now. Inspector, if she took poison, it must have been in some container.
Uh-huh.
Now, we didn't find anything suspicious in her purse, but she would have to leave the bottle someplace. Now, where was she just before she died?
In your apartment. But she didn't swallow anything there.
And before that, she was in her car. So how about giving that a quick once-over, huh?
Okay by me. Suppose it's the car over there by the driveway?
Well, we'll find out.
Uh-huh. It's a limousine with a chauffeur's compartment.
Here, here's the light switch.
See anything, Mike?
Magazines, lap robe, newspapers and stuff. Now, there's nothing under this cushion. No bottle.
Well, then she didn't have any poison with her in the car.
That still doesn't rule out suicide.
Hey, wait a minute, Inspector.
What?
We've been a couple of dopes. Mary accused her uncle. We accepted that and forgot everyone else.
Got anybody in mind?
Yes, the autopsy report said Mary's hands and toes were curled up tight, the symptoms of a South American poison. Who in that house there is a Latin?
Sabadell. Of course.
That's enough for me, kids. We're making a round trip right now.
But of course, gentlemen, I am from South America. My father was a trader on the Amazon River.
Then maybe it's more than coincidence that Mary was killed by a rare native poison from South America.
What? Well, you didn't tell us that. A poison from... Ah, oh, Santa Maria... Gentlemen, this is bad.
You're telling us.
No, you do not understand. You have not been in this room before. Look on the walls. Mr. Noble has poison spear, poison arrow, poison darts.
Yeah.
All from South America.
So, what about this, Mr. Noble?
It's true.
Oh, fine.
Pringle brought them to me from Ecuador. They were poisoned, but not now. I had the stuff all soaked off when I mounted them.
Mr. Pringle, is it possible to use that poison after it's been removed?
Well, I don't know. The natives in South America use a number of poisons. They act in different ways.
I can assure you that Mary did not die of poison from this collection.
Ah?
Where she procured it is a question for you detectives.
You still insist it was suicide?
I do.
Mike?
Hmm?
Maybe there's another way we can settle that.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, Mary seems to have been a very lonely girl. It's very common for lonely girls to keep diaries.
Hmm?
If Mary kept one, perhaps it would tell us what she intended to do.
Yes. I gave her a diary for Christmas.
She always kept it on the top of the desk up in her room.
Swell, then up to the bedroom we go.
That's her desk over there by the window.
And we'll find it on top, huh?
That's right. It's a big green and gold book.
Well, I don't see it, Mike.
Maybe it's in the drawer.
No. No, just the usual stuff. Well, it's not here, Mr. Noble. No, that's very strange. Could she have hidden it?
Well, I don't know if it's important enough to make a search right now. We'll go on with the question.
Noble, do you mind...
You're going?
Well, yes. My wife and I'd like to get home. If there's nothing we can do for you, we'll say goodnight.
Well, the inspector may not have done with you.
Oh, I think so. If we need you, Mr. Noble can give us your address and phone number.
Yes, of course. Well, good night, then.
Mrs. Pringle. One moment, please.
Pardon?
Your purse. Hasn't it taken on weight very suddenly?
What?
May I look inside, please?
Why, this?
Well, Mrs. Pringle?
A diary.
Well, I didn't know. Mr. Noble motioned to me to open my purse, and he slipped something in. I didn't know it was a diary. You see, it's a different color.
I'll admit it. I misled you all. I slipped the diary into her purse while you were searching the desk.
It certainly doesn't help your case, Mr. Noble.
I didn't know what peculiar ideas Mary might have written down. I wanted to protect her memory. And yes, my reputation.
Mike?
Hmm?
Did you read anything in it?
Nothing very unusual so far. No mention of suicide.
Mr. Savadell, I gather that you proposed to Mary.
Oh, many times.
We never followed up our questions with you either, sir.
Well, I know what you have in mind, but you are wrong. I killed the girl I love? No.
Mr. Inspector, excuse me. I realize this diary episode with my wife looked suspicious. But since Mr. Noble has admitted the fault, I think we're cleared. Would you let us go home now? Tonight's been a great strain on my wife.
Well, we'd all like to go
home. Well, I wouldn't ask it, sir, but my wife is not in good health.
I see. What do you say, Mike?
Yeah, certainly, by all means.
All right, Mr. Pringle.
Thank you very much. Good night,
good
everybody.
Night. Good night.
Yeah, good night. Good night.
And now, Mike?
Wait. Okay. Now, Mr. Noble, if you please, the address of Mr. and Mrs. Pringle.
I suppose you boys know this may be a wild goose chase.
Oh, I don't think so, Angel. The Pringles were a little too anxious to get home.
And I'm still not satisfied about that diary in the purse. They put on quite an innocent act, the way Noble came to their rescue.
Yeah. There's the house, number 1511.
Yeah, but it's all dark.
That's funny. We drove slowly so we'd get here ahead of them. We wanted to catch them with whatever they're up to.
Wait, Inspector. There's a light in the garage.
Yeah. Okay, stop your engine, Mike.
Close that door gently, Mike.
Okay. Leave us walk on the grass so they won't hear us.
And keep in the shadows.
Look. Look. They're both in the garage.
Let's cross the driveway.
What in blazes are they doing? They got a bucket of...
Uh-oh. Yeah. Pringle's got some of those javelins. Poison javelins.
Soaking them in the bucket.
All right. Let's make an entrance.
This water isn't hot enough. It's got to be boiling.
I'll go heat a kettle, then.
Don't bother, Mrs. Pringle. You're in enough hot water right now.
Oh, William!
Shane! Inspector! What's the meaning of this?
So you cook the spear points in hot water to extract the poison?
I don't know. I was just trying to find out, to see if it still had power.
Mike, there's a car coming up the driveway.
Yeah. Who is it? Why is he blowing the horn?
Oh, I don't... Hey, cut it out! Get off that horn! There's something wrong. Come on.
There's a man slumped over the steering wheel.
I'll pull him off the horn. Okay, mister. Raise up.
Holy jump. It's Savadell.
Yes. Unconscious.
But how? Who?
Here's the answer. Remember the symptoms of that South American poison? Tight, clenched hands? Look.
We'll return to Mike and Phil in just a moment. Friends, it's pretty safe to say that carbon is the number one enemy of your automobile engine. Carbon burns valves, gums up piston rings, and may lead to expensive repair bills. Therefore, anything that reduces carbon formation is of interest to careful drivers. And that's just what Triton Motor Oil does. Yes, that's right. Triton Motor Oil cuts down carbon. Why? Well, nearly all carbon comes from the lubricating oil, and not from the gasoline, as so many people think. But all lubricating oils are not the same in their carbon-forming tendencies. In fact, in a recent comparative test made with the 7 leading motor oils sold here in the West, Triton contained 38% fewer carbon-forming elements than the next best oil, 86% less than the average. The secret of Triton's superiority lies in the Union Oil Company's exclusive propane solvent refining process, a process so valuable that it's been patented by Union Oil Company. So, friends, with mechanics as scarce as they are today, why not take advantage of the extra protection the 100% pure paraffin-based Triton motor oil will give you against carbon? You can buy Triton motor oil at all Union Oil Minuteman stations. Just look for the sign of the big orange and blue 76. Thank you. An ambulance has carried the unconscious Sabadell to the hospital. Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector have returned to the Pringle garage with Mr. and Mrs. Pringle.
I know it looks bad, gentlemen, but you didn't give us a chance to explain.
Well, you've got your chance now, Mr. Pringle. Make the most of it.
You were out here in your garage trying to get poison off two South American hunting spears. What for?
Well, because they're the same type spears I brought Noble from Ecuador. I wanted to collect the poison and send it to the police.
So you people could compare it with the poison found in Mary's stomach.
Yeah.
Oh, you're suddenly very helpful, Mrs. Pringle, after you tried to smuggle Mary's diary away from the police.
But I didn't mean to. That's what made William and I think Mr. Noble might be guilty after all.
Looks to me like all three of you are in the same boat.
At least we don't have to consider Sabadell any longer.
Yes. As I see it, Sabadell was really in love with Mary. He tore over here to the Pringles for the same reason we did, because he figured they were in cahoots with Noble.
Then collapsed in his car from the same poison.
Okay, but which of these three did it? And is the poison from these three spears?
Wait a minute. I got a new angle, Inspector. Mary was killed by the poison. Sabadell got enough of it to send him to the hospital, but nobody else has keeled over tonight.
That's right.
Then what did Mary and Sabadell eat or drink that nobody else touched?
Did all of you people eat dinner together?
Yes, we did.
Then it's not the food. Did either of you see Mary or Sabadell drink anything which you didn't?
Not that I remember.
Well, they must have a food or drink or something that... Wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute. How about candy? Sabadell said he brought Mary a box tonight.
Oh, he always did. Mary was a candy fiend. Ate chocolates all day long.
Did you eat any tonight?
Oh, no. They're much too sweet for me.
And you, Mrs. Pringle?
I never touched chocolates.
Then they did eat something which you didn't.
If Mary always ate chocolates, that would be an ideal way to give her the poison. The sugar in the stuff might slow down the effect. We may be wrong, but we've got to find that box of chocolates.
Well, the last I saw of it, Mary and Mr. Sabadell had it with them in the car.
But we searched the car, Mike.
Yes, honey, yes, but we were looking for a bottle of poison. We weren't thinking of candy. There was an awful lot of stuff in that car. We've got to look again, and it better be fast.
I put the car in the garage here just a minute ago. If I'd known you fellows wanted to look at it...
That's all right, Dan. That's all right. Thanks for letting us in.
Sure. Anything else I can do for you?
No, thanks, Dan.
Okay, if you want me, I'll be in my room. It's right overhead.
All right. Okay, Dan. Thanks.
We better look good this time, Mike.
Yeah.
You need more light in there?
No, no. Did you find anything, Inspector?
No.
Nor I. Just the same stuff I found before.
It's hopeless, Mike. No killer would poison the girl and leave a box of chocolates high and dry for the police. He wouldn't be that dumb.
It isn't a question of dumbness, Inspector. It's a question of time.
But he'd still get rid of the chocolates. We don't know where to look for him.
Now, let me think. He wouldn't throw the chocolates out of the car. Somebody might pick them up and eat them.
That means he must have brought them back here.
Think, Inspector, think. Would he destroy the chocolates or hide them?
He'd destroy them.
That means the box, too. He'd have to burn it.
I saw an incinerator on this side of the garage.
Lead us to it, Angel.
Mike, you got a hold of something.
Well, pull it. Come on, pull it out.
Here you are.
The box of chocolates. Open it up.
They're mashed up a bit, but we can analyze them, and if the fingerprints aren't too mussed over...
Well, they probably are. Wait a minute, honey.
Yeah?
Back at my apartment, didn't Mary say she had told no one else but you and me that her uncle was trying to poison her?
Yeah, that's right.
Yet one other person tonight seemed to know something about it. When we were looking at Mary's body, he made a crack about Noble. It was Dan Casey.
Yes? Oh, Mr. Shane.
Yeah, do you mind if we come in for a minute, Dan?
Why, glad to have you.
Dan, tonight when we found Mary Noble's body, I heard you start to tell Mr. Pringle that your boss could stand some investigating.
Well, I guess I was right, wasn't I?
Perhaps, but before Mary came to me, she hadn't told her fears to a living soul. Yet you were able to name Briggs Noble.
Well, you know, that's just one of those things.
Mind if we take a little look around your room, Dan?
Now, hold on. What is it you want?
Well, here's one thing we want on your dresser. This dish of chocolates here.
What of it? Miss Mary gave them to me.
You mind eating a piece?
No, of course not.
That's it. Oh, by the way, I got a few more chocolates here in my pocket. It's the same kind.
Huh?
They had a few ashes on them, but I cleaned them off. Good as new.
Ashes?
Yes, from the incinerator. But I'll just add them to your dish here and mix them all around like that. Now, would you eat another? Go on. Eat a piece. Eat two or three.
No. No, I won't.
No. I didn't think you would. Okay, Inspector, I think this is where you take over.
I insist. You must have a drink. A cup of peace between the inspector and myself.
Well, I guess I would drink to that.
I can understand your suspicions of me, gentlemen, when I kept telling you it was suicide.
But what gets me, Mr. Noble, is how you could employ a chauffeur for months and not recognize him as your own nephew.
You forget I hadn't seen him for over 10 years. When he disappeared in his plane over Brazil, he was hardly more than a boy. But he was dead. The whole family thought he was dead.
But, Mr. Noble, he was Mary's cousin. Could he still inherit her money?
Certainly. The inheritance was so arranged that it would go either to him or, if dead, to me.
So he planned to disappear after tonight and come back in a few months as the long-lost heir. Quite a scheme. Chocolate-coated murder.
Say, speaking of that, do you think there's a candy store open at this hour? I'd like to buy Phil a box of chocolates.
No, thanks, no. After tonight, I've lost my sweet tooth.
Oh, but maybe when you see him, honey, nice, big, luscious bonbon.
Mike Shane, you haven't given me a box of chocolates in years. If you do it now, I'll know what to expect.
Oh, no, you won't, Angel. Oh, no, you won't.
Tune in again next week at 8 for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, with Joe Forte as the inspector. Tonight's story was written by Richard DeGraff and based on the character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
And that's The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, from June 11th, 1945, a program called The Mary Noble Case. And that starred Wally Mayer. And also in that cast, Kathy Lewis and Joe Forte. It was heard on Mutual radio series, and hope you enjoyed a good detective adventure. Did you like that, Lisa?
I did. It was a lot of fun.
Did you know who the killer was?
No, of course not.
No?
You have to listen to the end.
These are good. And you know, we have another quarter-hour show now we're going to play. It's called The Unexpected. We've aired a few of these in our day here on WGN.
Yeah, we like to throw a few unexpected things in here and there. You just never know.
This was a 15-minute mystery series that came to radio in 1947. Now, these were tales with unexpected endings, hence the name The Unexpected. Now, this starred Barry Sullivan, Marsha Hunt, Lorene Tuttle, Binny Barnes, Marjorie Reardon, Jackie Cooper. This particular one we're going to listen to stars Barry Sullivan. It was targeted toward an adult female audience. Most of the scripts had an adventurous, romantic twist in one form or another.
You love the romance.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about romance.
Yeah, I know.
Romance is, you know, when they talk about a movie and they're like, oh, it's a really romantic movie.
You run to those movies. You say that, but you're always there.
Directed by Frank Danzig and syndicated by Hamilton Whitney Radio Productions, in cooperation with Alan Ladd's Mayfair production. Alan Ladd was a part owner in this series. He, of course, also produced Box 13, which he starred in, and the Damon Runyon Theater, two really good shows. In 1952, Frederick Ziv and his Ziv Television Productions picked up The Unexpected for television. He featured Herbert Marshall as the host, and it appeared on NBC. It ran 39 half-hour episodes, but the radio series was a quarter-hour series and aired in the late 1940s. We have an episode now called Mirage. This stars Barry Sullivan from October 24th, 1948. Now, uninterrupted, here is The Unexpected.
Barry Sullivan in
The Unexpected.
Nobody has a right to buy a $5,000 item for $2,000, has he? But that's exactly what I did. Really, it was most unexpected.
The Unexpected. A secret future, a hidden destiny waiting for you. Where? When? Who knows? Tomorrow, today, an hour from now, perhaps in just a moment, you too will meet
The Unexpected.
And now, the distinguished motion picture and stage star, Barry Sullivan, in Mirage, a drama of the unexpected.
Louise was vacuuming in the other room. It was rather distracting, but I managed to concentrate on my stamps. This was Saturday afternoon, and I always spend Saturday afternoon going over my collection. And I certainly didn't see any reason why spring house cleaning should interfere. I just found an extremely interesting watermark in a 2-franc Algerian 1911. I'd never noticed it before. And I was wondering if it affected the value of the stamp when...
Herbert, move your feet.
Hmm?
I said, move your feet. I want a vacuum in here.
What, dear?
I said, I want a vacuum in here.
I'm sorry, Louise. I can't hear a word with that vacuum going.
Oh, you're the most exasperating man I... Herbert... Get out of this house.
Why, Louise.
Get out till I finish cleaning.
But, dear, my stamp collection...
And take your stamp collection with you.
But you must be joking. I couldn't carry it all.
Herbert Barrows, I'm trying to clean this house. I can't with you when your stamp's underfoot. I'm sick and tired of them anyway. That's all I hear. That's all you talk about.
Now, Louise, that isn't fair.
Fair? Oh, I suppose you think it's fair that every cent you get goes into those stamps. I haven't had a new coat for 2 years. Do you hear me? 2 years.
Now, dear, if I hadn't had the chance to pick up that early Cape of Good Hope Triangle, you'd have had your coat.
Cape of Good Hope Triangle.
It's quite rare.
So are clothes since I married you.
Now, Louise, you know we've never quarreled.
Just what do you think we're doing now, Herbert? Making love?
You wouldn't call a silly little discussion like this a quarrel, would you?
Yes, I would.
Always making mountains out of molehills.
Listen to me, Herbert Barrows. If you spend another cent for stamps, another cent, mind you, I'm leaving you. Do you understand?
Louise, did you eat cabbage for lunch again? You know how it affects you.
No, I did not eat cabbage.
You sound like you might have.
Oh, you're impossible.
Oh, dear, dear. I do wish she wouldn't eat cabbage. Oh, well, now let's see. Where's that imperfect centennial with the... Oh, she must have locked herself out. Just a minute, I'm coming. You didn't get very much air, dear. Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought you were my wife.
Really? You Herbert Barrows?
That's right.
Hey, how would you like an 1859 U.S. one-cent double impression?
What?
You heard me.
An 1859 Mirage stamp?
Right the first time.
Oh, come inside. Come inside, please.
Sure.
Do you really have a Mirage stamp?
Yeah. Want to take a peek?
Oh, I do. I most certainly do. Just let me take it over to the light. I've got my magnifying glass right here.
I'll stay with you if you don't mind.
It seems to be... Oh, yes, yes, I'm practically certain. I believe it's genuine.
It is genuine.
Do you know what this stamp is worth?
Sure. 5,000.
Oh, you do know.
But you can have it for two.
$2,000?
I need the dough in a hurry.
Oh, I see. Why did you come to me?
Some guy told me about you. Said you were interested in stamps.
I am, but, well, $2,000...
It's worth five.
You're right, you're absolutely right,
If you spend another cent for stamps, I'm leaving you.
But I couldn't buy it.
Why not?
Well, I don't know anything about you, and...
You're only interested in the stamp. You know, you ain't a real collector unless you got a Mirage stamp.
Yes, I've always felt that way myself. You know, if I had a Mirage, I don't think I'd ever want any more stamps.
Well, what are we waiting for?
I don't know.
Did you hear me, Herbert? Another cent and I'm leaving you.
Yes, dear, I heard you.
Yes, dear. What?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just cannot afford that stamp. Now, please go before I'm tempted any further.
Okay, okay. Just trying to give you a bargain.
I appreciate that. Good day.
Say, in case you change your mind, my name's McDonald. I'm staying at the Majestic Hotel. Be there till tomorrow.
I won't change my mind, Mr. McDonald. My wife won't let me. But she doesn't know what a Mirage stamp is. American 1 cent, portrait of George Washington. But in the background, they made a mistake and printed another picture, very faint, like a Mirage. That's why they call it... Well, I suppose you figured that out. Oh, no, I couldn't say anything to Louise about the stamp. She'd never forgive me. There was only one thing I could do. Yes, I said I was going out for cigarettes. That wasn't the truth, of course, but Louise believed me. Well, it was sort of the truth. I did get a pack on my way to Carl Weimer's shop. Good afternoon, Carl.
Well, Herbert. What takes you away from your stamp collection on a Saturday afternoon, huh?
Carl, you know my stamps, don't you?
I ought to. I sold you most of them.
Well, what would you say they're worth?
Maybe 3,600, 3,700. Why?
Will you lend me 2,000 on them?
Of course, but what for?
Carl, I've got a chance to buy a Mirage stamp.
Mirage? Really? For 2,000?
Yes, it's a wonderful bargain, but I have to close the deal today.
Well, I loan you the money, Herbert, but how will you pay it back?
25 a week, every week.
What about Louise?
I'm getting a raise next month. She'll never know the difference.
She might find out.
Then you'd get my stamp collection, the whole thing.
Well, I guess I haven't anything to lose.
Good. I expect he'll want cash.
Oh, that can be taken care of. I have plenty.
He went into the rear of his shop. When he came back, he handed me the money, and then we drew up a little paper, and I signed it. Just a formality, of course. I left his shop and went directly to the Majestic Hotel. Mr. McDonald's room was on the third floor.
Yeah? Oh, it's you. I thought you'd show up. Come in.
I've been thinking about the Mirage stamp.
That's funny, so have I.
Oh?
I don't think I asked enough.
Oh.
Matter of fact, I'm sure I didn't.
Oh, I see. Well, that's that.
It ought to be worth $3,000.
No, you're absolutely right. It's worth that much easily.
You give in awful quick.
But I've only got 2,000, so...
Hey, well, what's your hurry?
Well, you said it was worth three. I've only got two,
all right, so... take it easy, Junior. Take it easy. Yeah, you can have it for two.
I can.
Well, I'm not a man to go back on an offer.
Really? I thought you were the sort of person who might.
Hey, what kind of crack is that?
Just a snap judgment on my part and shows how wrong a person can be.
Yeah. Okay, where's the dough?
Oh, it's right here in my pocket. Here we go. The stamp?
Huh? Oh, sure. Here it is.
Thank you. Well, I guess that takes care of our little business.
Yeah, I guess it does.
So I might as well be going. Nice to have met you, Mr. McDonald.
The pleasure was all mine.
Oh, if you ever come back to Garden City, please do look me up. I'd like to show you my stamp collection. I'm really very proud of it, and the Mirage stamp ought to be the finishing touch.
It sure will.
A very strange man, but apparently honest, quite honest. All the way home, I felt like I was living in a dream. The cars, the buildings, everything seemed unnatural and distant. You might say I was rather elated. Louise was vacuuming the bedroom now, but I didn't even bother to tell her I was back. I just sat down at the desk and put the Mirage stamp in front of me and looked at it. You have no idea how beautiful it seemed.
Herbert! Herbert, you back? Herbert, stop grunting and answer me. Are you back yet?
Well, naturally I'm back. I'm in the same room with you.
Why are you sitting there looking like a moon-eyed calf? What kind of mischief have you been up to?
Louise.
Where were you?
Why, no, nowhere, just at the drugstore.
You sure you weren't buying stamps from that Carl Weimar?
Oh, yes, quite sure.
No, I've been looking for you. I want you to mow the lawn. I always say there's no sense in making the inside of a house beautiful, only to have the whole effect ruined by a sloppy front yard. Well, Herbert, what about it?
Huh? Oh, yes, the lawn. I was just...
I know. Well, you can think about your stamps while you mow.
I really didn't mind mowing the lawn. In fact, I felt so elated I'd have done almost anything Louise had asked. I didn't like deceiving her, but, well, there comes a time in any man's life when he has to call his soul his own. I'd bought a stamp I'd always wanted, and it's such a bargain. Really, now that I had the Mirage stamp, my whole life seemed complete. There was nothing more I could ask for, absolutely nothing.
You think the story is over, don't you? But wait. Wait for...
The Unexpected.
And now, Barry Sullivan, in the surprising conclusion to Mirage, a drama of the unexpected. After I was all through mowing the lawn, I practically ran back into the house. I simply had to take another look at the Mirage stamp. But it was gone. It wasn't on top of the desk where I'd left it. I searched very thoroughly, moving around all the bric-a-brac. But it was no use. The stamp was undoubtedly missing. I got down on my hands and knees and crawled along the floor. After all, a $5,000 stamp is pretty important. Finally, I grew desperate. Louise! Louise! Louise, come in here! Louise!
I can't hear you, Herbert!
Will you turn off that blasted vacuum cleaner and come in here?
Well, what is it?
My stamp. My stamp. Have you seen
it? Which one, Herbert? You have thousands of stamps.
My new one.
Your new one?
The Mirage stamp. Have you seen it?
You know I never touch anything in your collection.
But this wasn't in my collection. It was laying here on the desk.
Oh, that one. I used it.
You what?
Well, I decided I'd been too harsh with you, Herbert, about your collection. You get so much pleasure out of it that when I heard the offer on the radio...
What offer?
Well, all you have to do is send a postcard and they send you back $2 worth of foreign stamps. So I sent for them. They ought to be here any day. The only thing was, I didn't have a stamp for the card, but I used the one on your desk. What's the matter, Herbert? Aren't you pleased with me?
Mirage, a drama of the unexpected, starred Barry Sullivan. It was produced by Alvin C. Gershenson, written by Robert Libet and Frank Burt, and directed by Frank K. Danzig. And now, this is Hal Sawyer, inviting you to listen again soon when another of your favorite motion picture stars meets...
The Unexpected.
The Unexpected is a Hamilton Whitney production, transcribed in Hollywood.
And that is The Unexpected from October 24th, 1948, with Mirage starring Barry Sullivan. That's a good series, right, Lisa?
Yeah, I love it.
There's not a lot of those. There's maybe like 30 or 40 in existence, but we have, I think, most of them in really good quality. We'll air them every once in a while here on the WGN Radio Theater. Of course, we're here every Saturday night from 10 p.m. until 3 o'clock in the morning, playing all your favorite classic radio shows. Let's take a quick break, then it's more, so stay with us.
It's 2:45. There's no one in the place but you and me. So set 'em up, Joe. I've got a little story I think you should know. We're drinking, my friend, to the end of a brief episode. Make it one for my baby and one more for the road.
Well, Lisa, that just about does it. As I look at the clock on the studio wall there, it's time to say so long until next week.
But the good news is we'll be back here next Saturday with some great classic radio shows starting at 10 p.m.
Yeah, you see what we have here?
I know what we have. I chose them all.
What do we
have? We've got The Shadow, the Jack Benny program, because, you know, who doesn't love Jack Benny?
We all love
Gene
Jack
Autry's
Benny.
Melody Ranch.
Yeah.
Boston Blackie, that's for you.
Oh, I love Boston Blackie.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective, that's also for you. And The Unexpected,
because we love it. All right, well. Are you going to be here?
I will be
here.
Yeah,
are you sure about that?
I'm sure. Everybody stay healthy, and we'll be back next Saturday night at 10 p.m.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks to Mike Costella, our executive producer. Thanks to Shante Garth, our producer here. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank everyone at WGN, and thank you all out there in Radio Land for listening. We'll see you next week.